Let me tell you about Moo.com. Promo code Drinking Bros. Gonna get you 20% off your first order over there. Did you know there's an online cannabis store that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern you can think of. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. Whether that's the magic mind gummies for deep work and creativity, the PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings, or their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for the action at every turn. And touch into a full body experience over there. Listen, I love the night-night gummies, as I call them, the sleepy time gummies. I take, right now they're 15 milligrams. I cut it in half, and I take half a night. 15 minutes, dude, you are gone. I've never had anything like it. 15, 20 minutes tops, and I'm out. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days, gas stations, whatever. Mood's functional gummies, though, combine premium federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. Plus, Texas Governor Abbott just said it was all right to get these shipped through the mail. He vetoed the bill down here. Thank God. So order from mood.com today. Use that promo code Drinking Bros for 20% off your first order. Everything ships discreetly right to your front door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the promo code Drinking Bros. So head on over to mood.com. Find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. Don't forget to use the promo code Drinking Bros when you check out to save 20% off your first order. Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with the help of Hims. They provide access to personalized treatments so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Yeah, 3 to 6 months. That's it, kids. Hims offers convenient access to a range of prescription hair loss treatments with ingredients that work, including chews, oral medications, serums, and sprays. Doctor-trusted, clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil can stop hair loss and regrow your hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of your own home. Fill out an intake form, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. The process is 100% online, which means getting started has never been more convenient. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Plus, treatment options start at $35 per month. Hims has helped hundreds of thousands of men get their confidence back with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/drinkingbros. That is hims.com/drinkingbros for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/drinkingbros. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Welcome to Drinking Bros. We got a real life badass in the house. Dan's a pretend one. I feel that our guest today is a real one. Dan, I hate to do this
that,
to you.
That reminds me of my buddy James. used to say all the time. He was an NCO in my 82nd unit when I was a young private. And he would be like, you know, you're not really smart. You just know how to talk well. I'm like, all right, cool. I mean, I don't know what the difference between those two things are, but sure, let's do that.
We got Pat McNamara on the show. How are you, sir?
Rocking, bro. Thanks so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Look at your setup, dude. You've got you've got your own mics. You got everything. This is easy for us. You know what I'm saying? Yep.
Right on. Yeah, I got my own podcast. So,
But hey, plug it at the top. Go ahead, fire away.
Yeah. So, University of Badassery. The University of Badassery. Well, I mean, it's sort of a play on words. You know what we try to? We try to help people be better people. CJ and I, the metal motivator, and our motto is in life, you've got to be able to kick ass. And if you want to be an ass kicker, the first ass you have to kick is your own. So.
I like that. I like that a lot. I also like that goatee a lot. Is that real, by the way?
Yeah, man. So I've had this look, my own look, for more than a decade now. Goatee's real.
It looks like you could stab a bear, like a maybe an 800-pound bear, and just drop it in the middle of Bozeman, Montana.
Yeah, there's a little bit of product in that thing. I mean, I'm not going to lie. You know? otherwise, it's just a massive poof. It's just a massive, just a big mess.
That's why I keep my
hair. The end of a witch's broom.
That's why I keep my hair short, because for two reasons. One, there's too much body. It's everywhere. If my hair is longer than maybe inch and a quarter or so, it's just like, it looks like stupid. Or I have to fix it all the time. And I'm not doing that. Come on.
No.
I can barely get motivated enough to get out of bed in the morning. So I'm definitely not doing that.
Are you married, Pat?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I'm loving it. Sort of recently. Well, I've been together with my wife for 8 years, and we've been married for, in May, it'll be 5.
Okay, great. I'm sort of on the same path here. Me and my wife have been together for 9, I think, married for 7 now at this point. So
right on.
I've settled in. I don't know how old you are, but I've settled in. Like, I'm not one of those people who's like, man, I'm looking to get divorced and find some 20-year-old ass anymore. Like, I'm settled in and I'm good. I feel like with COVID and all this shit that's going on, you're pretty much dancing with the one that brought you at this point.
Right. Yeah, I am getting to the point of settled in. COVID has been my best year ever. I mean, absolute best year. I'm 55 years old. My wife and I have a substantial age difference. She's 30.
Okay.
We both came out of real shitty relationships. So, you know, in 8 years, we haven't had a single crossword. I mean, she is my best buddy. And when lockdown happened, I was freaking absolute pig and shit. I mean, I was like ecstatic that I was in this lockdown, that I couldn't travel, and that I was locked down with my wife.
Yeah.
It drove her a little crazy because she missed work. I didn't give a shit. I lost a lot of work. I had to issue a lot of refunds, but I generated 2 new businesses during it too. And I said at the beginning during podcasts, at the beginning of the COVID, what I call coronacation.
Yeah.
This will bring out either the best in people or the worst in people. And it's a great opportunity for self-improvement, you know, when we were locked down.
Yeah. I think I've improved as well. I felt like I could drink maybe 6 to 7 White Claws a day. Now I feel real confident with 12, with a full case.
Yeah.
And that's a humble brag, obviously. You know, I'm a better man than most. You get it. I'm sure you hear that all the time.
Yeah, man. My recycle bin was filled, you know, every week, just filled to the brim with empty bottles, whether IPA bottles or bourbon bottles. But
what kind of bourbon?
I'm teamed up with a Taconic out of New York, upstate New York.
Yeah.
Freaking really. Probably I'm a bourbon guy. And they're a host of my podcast, but you know, even still, it's definitely one of my, if not my favorite bourbon of all time.
Oh, it's made in upstate New York.
Yeah. I've had it actually, but I had it in New York. Are you guys in every state right now?
No.
Mm-mm. Yeah. It's hard for liquor to get out to every state. That's the reason I bring it up. Cause everybody asks, like, are you in New Mexico or Nevada? And it's like,
hey, man, the liquor laws are different in every single state. Trying to get bottles of liquor into every state, like you got to jump through all their hoops, whatever religion that existed in the 1800s that is still on their bylaws, that type of shit. It's difficult, man. It's just to jump into liquor. People don't understand.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No.
Well, I mean, it sounds, I was drinking a lot during coronation, but I also, I was probably in the best, some of the best fitness shape of my life too, because I established a driveway gym and I will never go to a gym again. I will never, ever go to a gym again. I dig my driveway gym and, I've got everything there that I need. Rain or shine, I don't give a shit what the weather is. I'm going to be hitting it. And, I was eating. My diet was it's always been ridiculous, but I went even overboard during coronation with nothing but just meat and veg.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was drinking a lot, but I was still super healthy.
You know? I love to hear it. Yeah, that sounds a lot like cognitive dissonance.
Right. But, yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Whatever.
Cognitive dissonance.
Yep. Let's do this.
Clash of realities.
I am in full blown denial as well. I do like the label on this Tectonic. It's just a dog.
Yeah.
Dogs are better than people. People are garbage.
Yep.
By and large. So I'm a big fan of that.
Dan's just, he's got two dogs and you've never seen a happier man to go home at night. And I understand it. So you were in the military for what? 22 years, special ops.
Yeah, man. Yep. 22 years. And I was fortunate in that it was all special ops time. Mm. I mean, and, you know, that being said, there was a lot of freaking luck involved because I was one of those SF babies. Mm. So, you know, just a lot of luck. And I mean, by the time I was 22, I had two SF MOSs. I was both Halo and Combat Dive qualified at 22 years.
Holy shit.
Yeah, man. I was fast tracking right off. So, yep. 22 years.
You grew up
in 05.
You grew up really fast. There was an interview I read about you where you had an interesting quote that said, I'm not a fan of professional veterans.
Damn straight, bro.
Yeah, can you explain that to the audience? 80% of our audience is military and first responder, and I found that quote to be super curious, and I wanted to get a definition from you on that.
Well, I haven't put words to defining it, but I could draw some examples. So the professional vet is the guy who did that, you know, one tour of duty or one term, one enlistment. And he rests on his laurels. He expects that everybody owes him something because he served his country. You know, and this guy may not have deployed. He may have been a pencil pusher. Mm. He could have been a badass, too. You know, he could have been in a Ranger battalion for that one tour of duty. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, I mean, he rests on his laurels and he expects that. He is owed that veteran's parking spot in the Harris Teeter and that he should get 10% off at Lowe's, you know, that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And that's all he's got. There's, you know, he's got no tomorrow. It's all about yesterday. And I really freaking hate those guys. I'm not a rest on your laurels motherfucker. I was a badass yesterday, but I'm a badass tomorrow. And I'm going to continue being a badass and helping other guys, you know, helping not just my fellow vets, but, just people, man, because I believe that most people are decent. I truly believe that. Of course, you know, in this country, the squeaky wheel gets the oil and we hear it's polarizing. You know, all the shit people, it's polarizing and it makes good news. So you think there's more of that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think so. I think that most people, you know, in our republic are good people. And I want to be around to motivate and help them as much as I can.
Yeah, man, I agree. Like, I try to think that most people are great people. And then you pop over onto Twitter and you're like, maybe I was wrong about that. Yep. Maybe most people are shit bags.
Yeah, they are.
But I think I think it's just online, to be honest with you, right? Because I think if you have a lot of these conversations in real life, obviously nobody's going to say shit to you what they would say online. Have you ever ran into that in real life where somebody came up and said, fuck you, Pat?
No. Mm-mm, nope. Hell no, but online all the time. Cause I have a pretty substantial following on my YouTube channel on Instagram and all the time. And
that's really funny, by the way. Did you see that meme a couple of weeks ago? It wasn't really a meme, but it was, somebody was talking shit about Paul Felder on the internet. And it was like, would you say that to his face? And the guy was like, no, he'd kick my ass.
Yeah.
But he's not in my face right now. So fuck him.
Yeah.
Right. It's pretty funny.
And the funny thing is my content is super clean. You know, I don't ruffle any feathers. I don't get into politics. I put out just good, clean content because I have a very diverse audience. I have a lot of little kids follow me. Mm. So I don't even cuss on my feeds, you know, not even shit or ass.
What about cunt?
There is an exception depending on who I'm talking to, because the thing is that could be a term of endearment.
That's true if they're Australian, especially.
Yeah, I had to tell my mom that because my mom was watching the show one day and she was like, look, I love it. I think Dan is great. But when he says the word cunt, like it's such a strong word. And I was like, well, it's a term of endearment. And she was like, man, I just think I'm getting older. And I was like,
yeah, she is getting older.
That's what I said. Yeah.
Which is to making her hotter to Giorgio, which is you gotta keep an eye out.
We've got a producer here who only goes for late 50s, early 60s. He's 30 years old.
Like, yeah. Wow. So you're almost in his wheelhouse now. I don't know if he's going. I don't know what his deal is.
Yeah, but like your wife would have to age double.
No, right, I mean
for Giorgio to be interested.
Pat, you're in your mid 50s, so you're almost there.
Yeah.
If she has Pat's abs, I'm down.
Yeah, I mean, dude, your abs are insane. Giorgio was just talking about it.
All right. Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
I mean, it is at your age, dude. Is it all natural? Is it just eating and working out? Are you you on anything else?
No. You know, people ask me that all the time.
Yeah.
And I know there's going to come a time where I want to supplement with
TRT, some more,
right,
whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
I just don't know anything about it, but you know, I could look in the mirror and contort my body and go, holy shit, I look like a 55-year-old man. You know what I mean? because there is a little bit of, you know, some shit is droopy and flabby, but, I am very disciplined with my diet. I am very disciplined working out, and I hit it hard. Because I have my own system, the combat strength training program, and I am kind of a testimony to that program, because, you know, when I retired broken up, four reconstructive surgeries, 13 broken bones. So, you know, military guys tend to have been ridden a lot harder, you know, or LEOs. You know, there's a lot of mileage on those bodies. So I started working out smart in my late 30s, you know, so I was getting close to the retirement age. Mm-hmm. And man, I found my zone, you know, and I work real freaking smart and I trick the body. There's a lot of muscle confusion and stuff like that. And I try to recognize voids, because here's the thing, you could work out all your life, like do bodybuilding style stuff.
Right.
But what happens is you fall into a rut of complacent adaptation, you know, where you're in a routine. And I like to say routine is a playground of a dull mind. And if you're just doing the same kind of movements all the time, you're going to fade away.
Well, no, we just saw the actual dangers of it with Klay Thompson from the Warriors. Right.
Yeah.
So he spent the entire last calendar year trying to heal up his left knee.
Yep.
That was fucked during the playoffs last year. Torn ACL. And you spend all that time focusing on that one area, building it up. The stronger you build muscles around core muscle and core tendon and core other tissue like that that's sensitive, and without paying attention to that specific group, then you effectively weaken it. Even if it doesn't weaken on its own, in relative proportion to the other strength in your body, it gets weakened. So when you start doing your normal movements or athletic movements throughout the day, that part is weaker than everything else. So maybe your left leg twists harder than your fucking right foot is able to take, and your Achilles snaps. And that's what happened to Klay Thompson, right?
Yeah, and you're overcompensating for it. And
it happens in sports all the time.
His Achilles.
Yeah, happens in sports all the time. And you're right. It's a big problem. I wonder, so you say you got your own training program, but obviously you have to borrow. Nobody's inventing new shit. So you're like everybody else, piecing together the good stuff and jettisoning the bad stuff. So I wonder if you use things like Tabata, which is like a Japanese cardio. It's about 5 to 15 minutes, depending on how you do it.
Yeah, I know.
30 seconds on, 30 seconds off.
It's where all this high intensity bullshit came from in America, basically. It's where it started from, but it's really good. So is that the kind of stuff you're doing, or what is it exactly?
Not necessarily. I do intervals. I don't need to say Tabata or whatever the fuck, you know.
It doesn't matter.
Right. But I love interval training. But what I do, I think my system is different in that I break the work week down into a power day, a strength day, a speed and quickness, hypertrophy, and skills. So that's how the work week. So if I've got 5 days, I'm going to stick to that schedule. So I could already program. Like today was a hypertrophy day. Boring, but necessary. And it's very simple. It just ain't easy. Hypertrophy sucks if you do it right. It freaking sucks really bad. And then I only work out about 30 minutes at a whack. But the thing is, during that time, it's absolute work. Because I have a formula that says to work in anaerobic chunks in circuit to near metabolic threshold to meet anaerobic goal. So you're working during that 30 minutes and you're taking minimal breaks. Like, for instance, on power day, you know, rate of force production, no speed, no power. So you've got to take those 15 second to 30 second breaks every once in a while so you could get into the next movement and attack it for that one full minute. But yeah, so intervals are freaking awesome, man. I love them. And my cardio, because of that, because it's a 30-minute continuous, like I don't pound pavement anymore. I do sprints, but I don't pound pavement. You know, I'm not going to go out.
I mean, we figured that out a long time ago, right? For most human beings, particularly people that are, I guess, not endomorphs, people that have meat on their bones, running is kind of pointless, to be honest. Running long distance is kind of pointless. I mean, there's no cardiovascular difference between running for 20 minutes and running for 2 hours. You reach it. There's a peak at some point where you just continue doing the same thing over and over.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily life-saving. You know, I think running a 400 is badass, you know, cause that's like metabolic threshold shit. And I mean, last year I'm still doing a sub minute 400.
Are you serious?
Yeah, man. Yeah, sub minute 400.
That is absolutely depressing. I feel awful about my life and my existence.
So can you run a 4 minute mile or what?
Yeah. Are you Roger?
No, hell no. See that 400 is, that's metabolic threshold.
Yeah,
shit.
That's all. Right?
It's all about timing. You know, it's where are you going 70% and can you kick that up to 80%? Because nobody could do 100% for a minute. You know, there's no freaking way. What are we good for? 100%, maybe 20, I don't know, 20 seconds, 100%, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is for us relatively fit human beings. Mm-hmm. But my point was too, if I'm in a, like if I went on a 3 day vacation with my wife on a beach and said, you know what, I'm going to go for a run. I still have no problem running 4 or 5 miles, even though I don't do it.
Really?
Because of that system that I'm training in, my heart rate is up that whole 30 minutes. You know, it's moving very well. And I'm huffing and puffing during that time. And I throw, like I said, because it's mostly interval stuff, minimal breaks, and you're working for between 25 and 35 minutes. And I've gotten creative with the driveway gym stuff because I have minimal equipment, but I don't need a lot of shit, man. Like I got a golf cart, you know? So on like strength days, like today during hypertrophy, I put that golf cart in tow mode and pushed it up my driveway and then slowly let it back downhill, pushed it back up the driveway, slowly let it back downhill. I live on a cul-de-sac that's a quarter mile long.
Yep.
And I'll do sprints with my bicycle up that thing. So talk about hitting that freaking metabolic threshold, man. You know, when you're sprinting a quarter mile uphill on a bike, and I've been doing that since coronation started.
Yeah.
And man, I reached another level of fitness during this thing. And I feel really, really good right now because I think mixing it up is very important. And a lot of people don't mix it up when they work out. They just go into routine mode.
Yeah. I would say the vast majority of people have probably 5 to 7 lifts they do plus cardio. Mm-hmm. And that's all they do. A variety of that throughout every week, forever, probably.
Yeah, yep.
And they live in a what I call a sagittalistic environment where everything's this way and that way, and there's very little transverse. See, I'm big on the transverse plane of motion stuff, and that's where, you know, the abs come in, because every day I'm doing transverse plane of motion stuff. So, and I'd like to say that in the transverse plane lives life saving and ass kicking, because that's. If you're saving somebody's life or kicking somebody's ass, it's all transverse plane of motion. It's probably the most important plane of motion to work, and it's also the most neglected when people exercise.
Yeah.
But for me, it's every day. Every day I'm hitting that transverse plane. For hip, for back, you know, for because, you know, it's called fitness, not brokenness, right? Mm. So exercise is about self-preservation, longevity, first and foremost. You know, stronger, longer. Motion is lotion. So in order to keep that body or that combat chassis moving, we've got to have healthy hips and healthy back, you know, and it just healthy, just consider joint health in general.
Now, joint health, that's not a problem for military people, right? Jumping out of planes and carrying right. my 150 pounds of gear around, that wasn't a yep. big jumping off the back of LMTVs and
yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, so, you know, and imagine like when I came in the 80s, we were still doing PT with boots on. We weren't, yeah. you know, with 5 mile runs with boots on.
That's
still.
True. My dad did airborne school with jump boots. I'm like, yeah, well, now I'm thinking about that. I'm like, fuck that.
Yeah, man.
Not so, trying to run you know, 5 miles in jump boots.
Dude, right. No, screw that, man. Everybody had shin splints. Everybody.
Yeah. Every single day. You run 5 miles every single day for 3 weeks in jump boots. That's not fun for anybody. Although the guys in the original airborne units in South Carolina, Currie and all that shit, they fucking did it. They ran up and down that goddamn hill every day in jump boots. So fuck Jesus. That. I mean, double fuck that. I'm not doing any of that shit. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, look, you had a cool guy job. You were a Delta guy. How did you yep. not get injured and you're still able to do all of this shit at 55? I mean, it seems crazy.
No,
to me.
Like I said, I've been injured. I've had 4 reconstructive surgeries, all from duty related stuff.
Uh-huh.
So this shoulder done, this arm right there, see that scar? So I was a toe jumper there.
Oh, shit.
So pulled my bicep into my forearm, dislocated shoulder, broken ribs, concussion. That was my first of many injuries. My right knee, I had total knee reconstruction, ACL replacement.
You said you got towed. What happened?
Dude, I was in jump school, man.
Oh, shit. It happened.
I was a freaking retard. Yeah. Yeah. Second jump. I was 18 years old, never been really injured before.
Right.
And boom. I mean, so I have no idea, but the you know, I probably fucked up and threw the static line at the jump master or something like that, but it went under my reserve and around my arm.
Holy Ooh. Shit.
Yeah. I was, check this out. You know that area, you know, Fryer drop zone. I was one of the first out. And I was one of the last ones to hit the ground. I towed almost all the way across Fryer.
Did they finally unwrap you, or did you have to cut your static line?
Nope. It came loose. If they cut me loose,
because this is before that retrieval. This is before that retrieval system, right?
Yep. Because I was instantly shock mode, you know.
Yeah.
Because the pain was just excruciating.
I've seen a lot of weird shit in jump school. One guy was a fucking E7, and he walked up to the door. And he handed it across his body. Across his body, I'm like, this dude's about to get fucked up. And I just stood there and watched him get his fucking helmet ripped completely off of his head as he jumped. I mean, I guess you're fine as long as you don't go unconscious. I mean, technically, you'd be probably fine either way if you're parachuting.
Yeah, mine came loose, thankfully. It just came undone.
So you didn't have to deploy your reserve and all that shit?
Nope. And I don't think I would have had the frame of mind.
Yeah.
To
honestly,
have
yeah. I mean, that's particularly in your second mind. Jump out of an air.
Yep.
Like
not on my mind.
My first couple of jumps, I was just like trying to take it all in. Mm-hmm. Like what is exactly happening right here? Cause you go through ground tower and jump week. Ground and tower week are just nonsense. You don't remember any of that shit. Then you get in the plane. You're like, all right, well, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Just do what the guy in front of you does. Right.
Yeah.
I hope it works out.
Cause when the time that I jumped out of a plane, I was tandem with a gay guy in Van Nuys, California, and he was behind me. So is it weird that I felt that I was in more danger than you guys were? Probably.
I'm starting a tandem jump school where you face each other the whole way down.
Oh man. That's actually the greatest idea ever. Yeah. That way you're forced to just
You take mushrooms and then 45 minutes later you hook up chest to chest rig, jump out and just like, try to have a conversation on the way down.
Oof, God, that would be miserable, wouldn't it?
Or you record hot ones on the way down.
Or you're going face to face with Hillary Clinton just all the way down, and it's she just ate Chinese food like a buffet. And you're
now that wouldn't be bad because then I get to see the terror in her eyes too. You know, that would be kind of cool as an experienced jumper. You know, I would love to see the terror.
You know, that's a good point. That's a good point you make. People ask me all the time what I do for quote unquote fun now, and they would expect to hear like whenever somebody invites me to go do something crazy, like hey, let's go fucking whitewater rafting or let's go jump out of planes. I'm like, yeah, that's cool. I'll do it, but I'm not going to be excited about it. I mean, it's just, I've done that shit a gajillion times. It's not, I know what to expect now. It's not fun anymore, but people that don't, I do enjoy going jumping with people who've never jumped before. That is really interesting because they don't understand the physics of the whole thing. So jumping out of an airplane is pretty goddamn safe. Compared to any other activity that has any amount of risk to associated with it, statistically speaking, jumping out of a plane is pretty safe.
I know, Pat, show your arm again and then say that statement one more time. I'm totally kidding.
Right. So anyway, so the arm, the knee, and then this shoulder, I had surgery on it, and then lower back L5-S1 discectomy, and then almost had to get my neck rebuilt as well because I've got herniated disc C5 C6 something like that. But you know, neck surgery is very invasive. They can't go in from the back, they have to go in from the front, push everything aside and then attack it that way. So I opted out of that, but it feels pretty good now. I mean, my hands fall asleep at night, you know, when I'm sleeping. Every once in a while, I'll go get a shot in the neck, you know, the steroid shot in the neck at the pain clinic. But, and then 13 broken bones all total, umbilical hernia, 3 concussions. So, I've accumulated a lot of injuries over that course of 22 years.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I was heading with this earlier was it's amazing you're in such great shape now at this age, because usually somebody who's gone through what you've gone through would be in a fucking wheelchair at this point.
Yep.
Clearly you were not. Was that part of the mindset of it, was overcoming these injuries and saying, all right, cool, man, I'm going to crush the rest of life because nobody else probably could have gotten through what I've gotten through?
Yeah, you know, like I said, I started working out smarter in my late 30s because – you know, my peer group right ahead of me was jacked up and they weren't, their mobility was shot and they were just kind of limping around. They were old men in their 40s, bro.
Yeah.
Old men. And I did that scared me because I was still in good shape, even though I had a lot of surgeries and stuff. I was, you know, fitness was always a thing for me starting at probably like 15, 16 years old. I started late. In the fitness game, but when I was 16, I made a massive metamorphosis. So it's always been a thing, and it saved me. It saved my ass through a lot of these injuries, and it helped me heal faster, and probably mitigated a lot of injuries too. You know, the just by the virtue of the fact that I have good structure, sound bones, good muscular development and all that stuff. It's probably saved my ass more than once. And so, yeah, man.
Yeah. You're doing it. You're a beautiful man.
Yep. Right now, yeah.
You look like you could still play in Metallica and absolutely crush Enter Sandman. What's your go-to tunes workout wise these days? We're looking for new shit.
You got to check out my playlist on Spotify. I call it the Metal Mac Attack.
Yeah. Is that what it's called? How do we look that up?
Yeah, Metal Mac Attack. Yep, Metal Mac Attack Spotify playlist. But I'm still right here. You know, I grew up with Judas Priest and everything about him.
Yeah.
I just freaking dig. Even their last album, I thought kicked freaking ass. Rob Halford's the coolest gay guy on the planet.
I'm glad you said it, because that was the thing, is like when he came out as gay, people were like, oh shit, was he metal or how
metal? He's the metal god, man. He is the metal god. But you know, I like a lot of the I like it, my metal to be discernible. I don't like it all over the map. I don't like it to be like collage, you know. Or
so you're not a fan of like deathcore, hardcore shit like that. You're more
No. I'm more like Chimera, Lamb of God.
Yeah, Lamb of God is the
best.
That's
Dan's favorite.
Yeah, they're the best metal band of all time. I don't think it's even close.
Dude, they are. You know, as far as like as far as musicians go, unfreaking believable. Yeah, songwriting, all that. I really miss that Chris Adler's gone because he's the best drummer in the business. Yeah. And I'm not sure if he's still with Megadeth, but good for them. because it, man, dude, yes, musicians like Willie Adler and Mark Morton, watching those guys play, like when they're putting out stuff on the interwebs right now and they're playing remotely, doing these like virtual concerts where, you know, each guy's in their own space, in their own house or whatever. Unfreaking believable. You could become an instant, even if you're not a metalhead, you could become an instant fan if you understand music.
Yeah, they're extremely talented people.
Dude, unfreaking unbelievable. I mean, if you look, and I play some. I play drums and guitar. So if you especially if you play, you gain a much greater appreciation for somebody who really knows what the fuck they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like, damn.
The other night when I came back from work, it was super late. There was a crazy one on PBS. It was Metallica and then the San Francisco Orchestra.
Philharmonic, yeah.
Philharmonic,
that was they're one of just a few bands who have done that. The other one that's really remarkable is Bring Me the Horizon. It's more like new metal stuff.
Right.
But they did a lot of their greatest hits with an orchestra as well. And people don't understand. Look, Metallica's drummer,
yes,
gets a little bit of heat
because Lars,
he's kind of a D-bag, and
that's being polite.
His reaction to the whole Napster thing was turned a lot of people off to him, mm-hmm, I think. Mm-hmm. And he's not the best drummer in metal. He's not even close. He's a good rhythm keeper, and that's about it. But aside from him, the rest of the guys in that band are fucking excellent musicians. Burton was great. Obviously, every bass player they've had is great, including the current guy who's one of the longest tenured bass players probably in all of metal.
Yeah.
Obviously, Hetfield's good, and Kirk Hammett's one of the best guitarists that exists. But the amount of talent it takes to do what they did is impressive in a way that people that don't play music don't understand. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. Yeah. They're one of those bands that is great together as a band. I can't imagine them without each other. You know?
No.
Well, it's funny you say that because it's either James Hetfield or Lars said, dude, individually, we're really not that good musicians. But together, we're fucking Metallica.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Like, but it's so freaking true. You know, but James Hetfield to me is like the quintessential metal rock star because he is playing real complex riffs.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you actually watch him playing, he's carrying a lot of the tunes where Kirk isn't, you know, and he's singing, and his voice doesn't suck. He's actually singing. You know, the other guy who blows my mind who could do that is Dave Mustaine. I mean,
Dave Mustaine's probably the most talented. Well, either him or homeboy from Primus, the bass player from Primus and singer, are probably the two most individually talented people that have ever been successful in metal. Right.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Mustaine,
I would agree with that one.
But you know, individual success doesn't, particularly in bands, the same way in sports, doesn't always translate into a lot of money or prolonged like championships or platinum records or whatever the case.
Yeah, you got to find the right band.
There's a guy named Michael Angelo, obviously not his real name.
Sure.
He's one of the professors at Guitar Institute of Technology, if that tells you anything. He's one of the most technically proficient guitar players that's ever existed. And nobody outside of a couple of guitar players could tell you who the fuck he is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't know who he is.
Yeah. You'll never know.
No,
you'll never know. You won't even remember to look this up later.
No,
that's how forgettable it is. But his technical skill is so good. But yeah, you're right. It's funny they say that in Metallica because Kirk Hammett and Hetfield are both actually really good guitar players.
Yeah.
And they're just being humble, but yeah, individually, who gives a shit?
Yeah, exactly. I often wonder like who those guys look up to, and that's my next question. Yeah, Satriani. It's one of my questions for you too. Like, I consider you one of the most like motivational dudes in the military space right now. Is there people that you look up to where you're like, shit, man, this guy motivates me, and I listen to his podcasts or I follow him on Instagram? Like, is there guys like that for you? I wonder.
There are a couple, and they're not like outstanding individuals. The guys I look up to are the guys who have had to deal with extreme adversity or maybe extreme weight loss and they're getting after, or they were in a real dark place, you know, like depression and shit like that. Or they've, grew up with a real super shitty childhood, you know, and they beat and all that stuff. Like the professional athletes and stuff like that. I mean, they've been coddled and, You know, they've had their dicks sucked their most of their life. So none of them. But the average Joe motivates me when he tells me that I'm motivating him and that he's lost 30 pounds. And that's the people. Let me reset here. I'm ADD like a motherfucker. So people ask all the time, hey, bro, what motivates you? How are you able to get after it day after day? I said, well, you do. If I am motivating you, you're motivating me. So now I have an obligation to continue that, you know, because I've obviously lit a fire under your ass and you're following suit and you're adding tinder and kindling and logs to that fire. So that's where I came up with this line of keep the blaze alive. Mm-hmm. Because I like to fire people up, you know, and maybe nurture that ember and create a flame. But once it's self-sustaining and they're doing it themselves, man, that motivates the hell out of me. So the average Joe, you know, the dudes who follow me and they say, man, you're motivating the hell out of me. Those guys motivate me because I have an obligation, man. I have a duty. So when they ask what keeps you motivated, you do.
That's a very diplomatic answer.
Yeah, it is.
You didn't say anybody's actual name, so you don't have to explain to anybody else later why you didn't say their name.
It's Mr. T, right? Like, it's got to be Mr. T. He's on that list. Right?
Well, I don't know. Tyson's about to fight again. So maybe it's Tyson. Yeah.
Over Tyson and Roy Jones, man. A couple of my all-time favorites.
I don't know how that's going to shake out, man. Tyson is...
I don't know if Tyson understands that it's an exhibition.
He does not look like he's training for an exhibition.
No, it's like fucking Mr. T and Rocky III. He might kill Roy Jones.
But I will say this. Roy Jones fought almost until he was 50 years old. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, as far as running around the ring for a few rounds and getting Tyson gassed.
He's getting smoked.
I think that's what's probably going to happen. And then, you know, he'll throw in some jabs or whatever. What I'm going to tune in for and what I'm paying for, my American dollars for, is just... that one shot, if Tyson were to land it and just end his life, like that would make my Thanksgiving. And I know that's sick and kind of dark, but you know, that's Thanksgiving. No,
that'd be cool. Right. That'd be cool too. Yep. No, I 100% agree. I don't think they're going to I don't think Roy would give him the opportunity to mix it up though, you know? And then Tyson's probably only good for like a minute and a half. I don't even think a full round. Going at a real boxer's tempo. I don't think he could sustain it.
I tend to agree. I'd say, well, we got some producers behind the camera here. Look up and see if there's odds on mybookie.com to see if, because we have a sports show. So mybookie is one of our sponsors. Look up if there's odds on this, I want to bet on that fight on mybookie.com. By the way, promo code Drinking Bros will double your deposit. We have a couple sponsors that pay for the show. If you don't mind, Pat, we're going to drop them real quick and then
rock and roll,
feel
bro.
Free to drop one of your own. You're in the podcast space. First and foremost, ghostbed.com/drinking bros. Finest mattresses in the land. If you're a member of the military or first responder, a teacher, or work in the government, you get 30% off everything in the store. That's pillows, sheets, mattresses, adjustable bases, you name it. And they're going to have a monster Black Friday sale coming up. And this month is like for us dummy civilians. We get 30% off of everything too. So I feel like a real American hero. That's ghostbed.com/drinking bros. They always have a 36-month pay-as-you-go program. No interest on that. So you can gangbang all of those deals with their no interest program at ghostbed.com/drinking bros. Last but not least here, D'Anthony, is First Leaf. We love the First Leaf wine. Try firstleaf.com/drinking bros.
Big fan of First Leaf. It's for those of you who either really enjoy wine or want to.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very good way to work your way into the wine club, field. So
$30.
The first thing you do is you go through a little quiz.
Yep.
Tell them the kind of flavors you like, and they ask you an assortment of questions to determine that. And then they send you wine that they think fit those flavor profiles, six of them for $30, basically.
Yes.
Nice. And then you drink all that wine, preferably the same day.
Yep.
Drink the wine as you drink it. You have about a month to drink it. Then you go back on the site, answer questions based on the wine you drink,
mm-hmm.
and they will start to custom tailor the wine shipments to your particular flavor palette.
Correct.
It's great. Correct. I mean, it's the best wine club I've ever been a part of.
And the wine is from all over the world. So it's the best in the biz. I love it, man. I just got mine yesterday, my new monthly shipment yesterday.
Yeah, I got one on the way
right now. Just in time for the holidays. Go to tryfirstleaf.com/drinkingbros today. Yeah, six bottles for $30.
It's also a good gift to give people, especially
the holidays.
Like if you're either way, if you're looking to give somebody a pricey gift where you want to give them 3 to 6 bottles a month for the rest of the year, if it's a big gift for a spouse or a loved one or whatever the case is, or if you just want to buy 6 bottles and give them always gifts too. I mean, there's plenty of ways to go about this year.
It depends on how rich you are. Ooh, you rich. What about you, Pat? You got any sponsors you want to throw out? What about your company?
I got the Taconic, also a really good gift.
Yeah, it is. That bourbon.
For you bourbon guys.
Where is it available?
And, I'm pretty sure. See, I don't order it. I'm really sucking bad as pushing their product right now. But, you know, if you get on their site, the Taconic distillery site, you could figure it out there. TACONIC. And I'm a coffee guy too. I'm part of the Invader crew, and I have my own blend.
Look at you.
Blaze Ops blend. Yep. So double dark because I love.
Yeah.
I'm a coffee guy.
It's funny.
We had a discussion, you know, if you had to give up one beer or coffee, which one would be? And I had to really think about that because I'm a beer queer. Love my beer.
I would give up beer. I don't think I could start my day without coffee.
No, I could. I could switch to Adderall.
Oh, but right. To wake up to?
Yeah.
Doing a couple lines of Adderall to wake up to is, it's not as good as coffee.
I love the flavor of coffee, but I need to be.
I hate the flavor of coffee.
I have to do something to make the voices in my head go away.
Obviously.
So I have to start drinking pretty much immediately when I wake up.
Yeah.
I drink Black Rifle, obviously, every single day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I add whatever I add to it. Let's just keep it there because I'm not promoting binge drinking with Black Rifle coffee.
Goddamn right. It's not like you're throwing some screwball whiskey in there for the holidays.
Actually, Black Rifle, if you like the darker roast, if you like Murdered Out or any of those darker roasts, add screwball whiskey to it. It's
great.
Really fucking good.
It's great.
It's really good.
Pat, now that you're in the podcast space, you know the world. Is it strange? You've worked with arguably the best at this point, right? You did Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan is kind of the king of our industry here. What did you learn from that experience that you applied to your own show?
I liked the beginning, you know, the intro. Mm-hmm. We just started talking. Mm. You know, there was no real intro. I thought that was cool. Joe's a really good guy in that he's interested, therefore he is interesting. Mm. You know, he knows something about everything, even a little bit. But he knows something about everything. And I think that's a good, you know, as a host of a podcast, to be interested. So that way you can drive a conversation.
Yep.
Where you could adjust it. You know, it's malleable. And you could participate in that conversation too. I mean, like you guys are, this is obviously a great venue right here too. Because the discourse, I mean, we've been all over the map, you know, in this, whatever, 45 minutes we've been chatting. And I like that. Instead of sticking to one particular topic, I think we've talked metal, working out, booze, we've talked injuries.
Porn, obviously. It'll be, us, it's porn and then Anne Frank after that. and, you know, I want to know when the last time you read her diary was.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Gone too soon. Yeah. When's the last time you breezed through Anne Frank's diary?
Me?
Yeah.
I never have.
Really? It's a good read. I would recommend it for the holidays. It's just sit down and read it to some kid. Totally kidding.
You know what? In real life, though, like a really interesting thing might be to read some of the legal papers. I don't know if they were all burned or whatever, but the legal challenges to the rise of Hitler and shit like that, and the brown shirts. That might be interesting to see what the warning signs of shit like that were, because we. People are so hyperbolic these days about anytime anybody does anything, they're like, oh, he's trying to trying to name himself king or try there. He's a tyrant. He's a fascist. Like, shut the, you don't know what fascism looks like, bitch. Yeah. Why don't we, and it's funny, kids in school these days, in middle school and elementary school, they don't know what the Holocaust is. So
yeah, man, the
biggest,
have no idea.
The biggest example of fascism in history, and one that played out on the world stage and over the course of about 10 years it took them to come to power. That's a lot of good research we can do on how to prevent that shit from ever happening again. And for some reason, we don't ever want to talk about it. It's weird. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand
it's
that.
It's sad, too. It's sad.
It is sad. I mean, it's not all about people, you know, obviously associated with the Holocaust, but the Nazis were a political party. They came to power, by and large, by legal means.
Right.
And if they could do it there, it can happen. And if you can come to power with an organization like that through more or less legal means, that's a problem.
Yeah.
We need to understand how that happened and then prevent that shit from happening in the future. And from either side, whether it's fascism or socialism, communism, either way, we have to understand how that shit happens. I mean, every other kind of disease, if you want to call it that, we would look into it, what causes it, and try to learn how to prevent that shit from happening, right?
Yeah.
But this one, we've not.
No.
And we keep making the same mistakes over and over.
You know, and it's weird you brought that up. look, we're a comedy show, obviously, but there was... I did read the JFK files that were released from Trump. Those records and everything. And I was genuinely surprised leafing through those where... there were some things that I didn't know about our country that I didn't think we would do and our own government would do. One of them that was in there was that the FBI was planning on planting bombs in different parts of Florida.
Yeah, black flag operations, yeah.
Yeah. Look, if you had told me in a million years that our own government would plant bombs to make it look... What they were trying to do is make it look like socialism in Cuba was taking over our country and communism and all that shit... I never in a million years would have thought our government would have done shit like that.
Really? So the reason the FBI exists and the reason it's the most powerful institution in the Department of Justice is because Hoover was a cunt. J. Edgar Hoover, one was, he was a transvestite, not a transsexual. He was a transvestite. He liked to wear women's clothes.
Okay. Right? Yeah.
And back then that probably caused him some issues. Right. And it made him super paranoid and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
And he clearly applied that. So, and he had a weird relationship with his mother as well. So that he clearly applied that to his profession. But he kept dossiers on every business person and politician in America.
Yep.
So he could blackmail them to get what he wanted.
Basically. But I never thought it would go as far as planting bombs in your own country to make Americans think one thing and then everything else.
Why not? The CIA murdered a sitting president. Why would you not expect black flag operations?
Here's the thing. I guess because you could, it's the potential loss of life in something like that, right? Whereas stealing an election, if that's, you know, if you believe in that, if that's what you believe, in, that's what's going on right now. Mm-hmm. Nobody's getting killed. Nobody's going to lose their life over it. Shit's going to change. But it's surprising. So I guess, you know, if you were applying that theory from the 60s and what they were trying to do back then to today, would you say that's even possible, Pat? Like, are you buying into any of this shit?
I think it is happening today. Look at the government manipulation of the media and vice versa. Mm. With the censorship and with the subliminal manipulation and all that crap, I mean, I think it is still happening. And I've been censored and shut down myself.
I know. Look, we all have. But I don't think the government is necessarily behind it.
There's certainly something bigger than the United States government at play, right? Because the United States government is too... You can't manage... 500 people. If you put 538 people in a room, mm-hmm. plus the president and vice president, so 540 people, that's 438 Congress people and 100 senators, the president and vice president, right? People who are elected to federal power. If you put that amount of people in one room and expect them to agree on anything, good fucking luck, right? But if you have 4 to 10 business people that are wealthy that can leverage influence over these people, influence that gives them money so they can get reelected, and all this other protects them from shit and whatever the fuck else, that small amount of people can definitely control an entire country. And we've seen it before. Like, we think that some ridiculous, like, oh, it's ridiculous that a couple of people would be in charge. And it's not like they're in charge of every single thing that happens all the time. They move the needle where they feel like they need to. It's no different than the Roman Senate. It's no different than any of these other oligarch organizations that have existed over the years. It's no different than Russia right now. As a matter of fact, they just do it out in the open because they don't give a fuck.
Right.
That's the difference. And that's why Trump scared people so much.
Well, I think what's shocking to me is this one doesn't feel like it's our government. It feels like it's like four dudes. It feels like it's Zuckerberg, Jack Dorsey, Bezos, and
whatever his name, Riz. What is his name from Google? I can't remember his name now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the guy from Google, whoever it is.
It doesn't matter, even if they're not doing it intentionally.
I think they are doing it intentionally. I'm surprised the government doesn't stop it.
Well, the government doesn't have the power. By the power, I mean people in government are cowards. Politicians are cowards. They're more worried about staying in office than they are about doing the right thing. And that's very clear, because otherwise they could shut this shit down right now if they wanted to. The government could get together and be like, hey, you know what? Regardless of politics, these people are fucking over our democracy right now. We got to shut this shit down. You can definitely get 400 people to agree on that.
Yeah.
Because I could go out in the street right now and find 200 people, 200 conservatives and 200 liberals that definitely agree with that sentiment. So it's not crazy to think you get people to agree on that. But so the potentiality is there. They're just cowards. That's it.
Yeah. What are you worried about in the next 10 years, Pat? Like, in your life personally?
Nothing. I'm really not. I have no great worries, no strife, no trepidation about anything.
Why,
I really don't.
Why is that? How are you so mentally zen that you're not thinking about it?
Well, I take care of myself, you know, and my family first, and nobody's going to dissuade me from doing that. And so long as I'm good, you know, I've got solace and security. Yeah, nothing's going to get in my way. I mean, am I going to be adversely affected by some douchebag politician? Of course I am, you know, but I'm not worried about anything. No,
that's fucking hilarious, dude. I look, for a badass like you, that's the exact answer I was wanting to hear. But it's like you actually said it. Whereas if I said that, it'd sound like a fucking douchebag.
Well, like, what I always ask, what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah.
And then I think about it. I'm like, I've already kind of done that. So that's not that big a deal. I mean, let's say the worst thing could happen is somebody can come kill me. Then I'm dead. But the worst that could happen here is that everything breaks down and we're left to fend for ourselves. Like, all right, cool, man. We can do that.
Yeah. I'm not
too worried about that, to be honest. That's why I did a great, in my opinion, a great rant, not to pat myself on the back, but a great rant about Antifa about a year ago, where it was like, you better fucking pray police don't go away. Police are the only thing protecting you right now. Like, if you skinny little white bitches in the Pacific Northwest that think, if police go away, somehow you're going to start running the show. Like, I'm sorry, brother, but you don't know what the fuck you're doing. I will skin you alive in the street, and I will use your skin to keep me warm in the wintertime. You know what I mean? Sure. Like, you're out of your goddamn mind.
I think LEOs should have access to voting records.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Well, I like the opt-out thing. So just this is our idea. Me, Ross, yep, Jared, yep, and Mike the Cop came up with this about a year and a half ago. If you hate cops that much, you can... when you go get your driver's license renewed, you can have an opt-out thing on there, just like a donor card. And they can look it up when they look up your phone number, your address, and like, oh, this person opted out of police coverage because they hate us so much. So we don't have to respond to that.
Yeah.
Sorry. You can drive yourself to the hospital, bitch.
You put a thing on your door that it's just NP, no police. I'm good to go. So even if I call, don't help me, don't come to my door. I'm all good. But I don't need the police.
But doesn't that speak to the character of the people that wear the badge in the United States, where you can be spitting in their face wearing a shirt that says all cops are bastards and fuck the police, and if you get hurt they'll come help you immediately without thinking twice about it.
Yeah.
That should tell you something about the kind of people that are actually in uniform.
But look, they did for Alyssa Milano. You know, she was on the big defund the police movement, and then an 8-year-old was shooting an air gun at some squirrels next door. She called the police. 30 of them rolled up on the house, and she was like, I thought something else was going on. It's like, it doesn't matter what the fuck you thought was going on. You still needed the police at the end of the day, apparently. Do you ever have dreams where somebody breaks into your house and you fucking kill them?
You mean fantasies? Yeah. I don't have dreams about it, but I plan for it. Mm. You know, I mean, even in my office right now, I mean, I've got this and I've got this right here.
Yeah.
Just because I have a closed door right in front of me.
And, sure.
So I am not paranoid by a long shot, but, you know, we don't plan to fail, but we fail to plan. And I consider myself prepared and ready for just about anything.
Has anybody ever fucked with you in a bar in real life? Like, or your wife? Oh, or yeah, anything yeah, like yeah. That?
Because dudes are dicks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dudes can be dicks. And I've been in a bunch of street fights. They've all gone poorly for the other guy. But the thing is, number one, I'm not going to start it. See, if you start it, you deserve to get your ass kicked.
Agreed.
And number two, you've got to think about, you know, conflict resolution and try to avoid it as much as possible. If the guy persists, then he probably deserves to get his ass kicked. Mm. But you got to have a good plan, you know, a good strategy in place. And then you have to strike, you have with ferocity and with the intent to do that guy harm. You know, I have a light switch that goes on and off. Mm-hmm. So if the douchebag wants to present, you know, if he wants to go up another level of douchebaggery, that light switch comes on, boom. And I say to myself, well, if he enters my zone, he's going down. I'm going into ballistic microfight mode. And you know, it hasn't happened much recently. I think the last time was when I went to the Slayer concert last year. I had to knock some guy out.
No shit. But, last, you know, year.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, yeah. And he deserved it. He was a bully. He was picking on. There was a group of them. I was in the good seats. You know, I bought really good seats. I didn't want that. It was Lamb of God Slayer, bro. I didn't want that fucked up for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Obviously. And,
yeah, that was Slayer's farewell tour, right?
Yeah, 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 yeah. I was not going to miss that. Mm. Oh, my God, man. My wife became an instant fan. Mm. You know, she wasn't sure about Slayer because she likes metal to some degree.
Right.
But when she saw Slayer, she was like, oh, my God. Instant fan. Boom. She went, this right here is talent. This is effortless. She was yelling at me. This is effortless. Look at that. I was like, yeah, man. They know what they're doing.
What happened in the fight? Like, was it in the good seats or was it in the pit?
It was in the good seats. I was on the aisle.
Okay.
And this group kept coming down. They were probably in the nosebleeds or in the grass or something like that. And they kept coming down. And there was a security guard, you know, guarding the next, the VIP section.
Sure.
And they kept coming down. And he was just some kid, some young, skinny, 120 pound kid. With a shirt on that said security. He probably got hired for the day.
You know, yeah.
Something like that. And they were screwing with him. And I told him, hey, just get back. And they did. They pushed back. And I had all these other guys looking at me, you know, in the good seats.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that guy needs to freaking go. So I knew I had already established some assets. In case, you know, he had more liabilities. So I was establishing rapport with these guys. Comes down again, got in the security guy's face. I pushed him this time. Whoosh. So I drew first blood, basically. And he went back quite a ways. And I said, nope, 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 nope. Just stay right there. You don't want any of this. Trust me, you don't want any of this. And he freaking charged and bam, bam. So three quick punches. He went down like a sack of shit. His buddies come down. And everybody just starts swinging, whoosh, whoosh. They're out of the seats. And now I'm trying to break up the fight that I started because I didn't want these guys to get kicked out, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Because here comes all the security, the real security. And I was like, no, 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 stop it. Because, you know, these guys paid freaking top dollar for those seats too. And I didn't want them to get kicked out. So now I was trying to break this shit up.
That's hilarious. So what happens? You give this guy a three-piece combo, and then what? Yep.
He went down like a sack of shit. Whoosh, right down.
Did they got to carry this guy out? Is it like
no? He got up. He got up. He okay. got up. So it wasn't like a flash knockout. Hmm. So the one landed flush. The two went right into his fleshy part of his face. So and then the three, because he was already going down, just grazed the top of his head. So it wasn't a real, I mean, he went down from the 1-2, ba-boom, and then as the three was coming across, he was falling. So I kind of missed and grazed the top of his head. But so he went down and then like did a crab walk backwards and then got up. And then they all jumped in. So it was a big melee. It was a big freaking melee. You know, nothing, I mean, very apropos for a Slayer concert. Mm.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's par for the course, right? You know, you grab a beer, you see somebody get knocked out, you're at Slayer. Like, we're good to go on that.
I did not want it fucked up, man. You know, I was right there in their grills, you know. Please don't fuck this up for me. It's the last time I'm going
to
see these
guys. Yeah, it's like you're about to have a threesome and the girls start arguing. It's like, hey, right. Ladies, just relax.
Yeah, there's plenty of dick for everyone, baby. Yeah. We know how that goes. You're one of the most fascinating dudes on the planet. We could talk to you all day. This is the point in the show we get to the drinking bro of the week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the drinking bro of the week to?
Let me see. I was not prepared for this, but I've had, you know, mentors in the military. Mm-hmm. That have because without them I would not be where to the level I got to. So I needed those mentors, you know. Guys like my buddy Slappy Charlie. You know, he was a big mentor.
Yeah.
Slappy
is
Yeah. Yep. But on the outside here, there's a lot of guys I look up to that I follow on the interwebs.
Yeah.
You know, guys like Chris Duffin and Bert Soren, you know, so big fitness guys, but also drinking bros as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, Sorenex is a good company for sure.
Yeah.
Those guys.
Yep.
On that note, I'm sure other people and these guys, well, at least Beckwith is before your time, but
yep.
I wanted to ask you about something. Now, Navy SEALs have this this reputation for writing books and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But
yep.
Eric Haney, the first sergeant major of 1SFOD Delta, and Charlie Beckwith, the guy that started the goddamn organization, both wrote books. So what's happening? Are they PNG or how does that, I mean, I don't.
Yeah, absolutely. I know there for a long time, there were several plank holders in the unit were trying to bring up charges on Haney.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Haney went a little farther than Beckwith. Beckwith wrote a book about how to do organization for special operations units, basically. Yep. Haney got into television. That's a whole different kind of situation, right. Obviously. But, you know, do you think now with global media the way it is and how, look, there's no secrets about who, I mean, look, there are to some degree, like the unit, the unit changes its name frequently and blah, blah, blah. So you don't know what the actual name is, but everybody knows what the fuck it is. Yep. Everybody knows what the mission is at this point. Mm-hmm. So at what point do we have to accept that and start not talking openly about it, but at least allowing, because telling those stories, I think is really important for people to understand. One, the level of sacrifice, that's important. But even more so right now in this debate about troop reduction is the level of capability that we have with much smaller assets than what we would normally need to deploy or what another country might need to deploy. We can operate with a very lean team and get a lot of shit done. And it's what we should have done in the over the last 20 years instead of this stupid bullshit we've been doing for whatever reason. We should have just been re-executing Anaconda over and over and over again. That's all we should, in my opinion. But anyways, do you think being a little bit more open about that stuff can help change the narrative a little bit and stop using superfluous amounts of force, which is, I mean, in my opinion, the only reason we're sending massive troops is to for the military industrial complex. It has nothing to do with the goal, because what the fuck is the goal? I don't know. And I wonder what somebody who is an operator thinks about that.
Well, you know, you say that, you know, we know what's going on, but I mean, there have been so many, like just over the past 2 years, so many operations that have never been a bleep on the media's radar. And I'm talking big stuff. And I think a level of anonymity is good. You know, I told my wife one night, I said, dark people do dark things in dark places of the world, and nobody really needs to know what the fuck is going on.
Yeah. Man.
Because I think that anonymity adds to that level of security. You know, I'm still privy to some stories, you know, with guys who are active, and I'm just blown away, you know, living vicariously through it. I'm like, holy shit, I can't believe you guys did that stuff, man. I mean, it is badass. And it shows a level of discipline too. You know, that that holy crap, man, we can keep a secret.
Right.
You know, we can keep this. We can prevent this from being full disclosure. So I it makes me happy knowing that there are a lot of things going on that us first worlders, you know, we don't need to worry about it.
Yeah, I agree. My wife says that all the time. She was like, hey, man, why do we need to know about all this shit? Wouldn't it be better as Americans if we just didn't know and left that job to people who could actually execute it so the rest of us can go heat up a hot pocket in the middle of the night and feel safe?
Yeah, right. It would be nice if you could
dead serious.
Trust your government.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
Nah. We'll get maybe next time. Maybe in the other life, brother. Pat, thank you for being with us. Where can everybody find you?
Well, I am TMAX Inc. So that's my IG handle and my webpage. TMACSINC, TMAX Inc. And I'm also Combat Strength Training. And I'm also my podcast, The University of Badassery with CJ Ortiz, the Metal Motivator. So those are my main platforms right there.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, look, man, you're a motivational dude. Super inspiring. We're grateful that you spent some time with us today. We really appreciate it. For D'Anthony Holloway, I am Ross Patterson. For Pat McNamara, this is the Drinking Bros. Good night, everyone.
Rock and roll, baby. Thanks, guys.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because we know in making the most of your home, DIY doesn't just stand for do it yourself. It also means dream it yourself. And we're here to help protect the dreams you're building. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.